Blog Talk Radio.
A denied entry to USA show.
You go retaliating and do towards your friends, it becomes a gang situation. Next thing you know, y'all up against the military, and then y'all become a militarized zone.
All right, listen up. Have you been stopped at the U.S. border?
Trying to keep it going, you know what I'm saying? But whoever bring the noise, you know, to 109th and Figueroa, you know what I'm saying? We got to handle our business. We ain't letting nobody step on our toes. Blood, rips, or whoever.
Right here, these all that.
Do you have a criminal record? You know who you are.
To my bullet holes, scars. To my 19, 20 years in prison. YA, camp, juvenile hall, San Quentin, Folsom, Solidar, Cork, Pelican Bay, Chino, the whole.
Well, this show is definitely for you then.
I think the police out here primarily arrest criminals, irregardless of their hue, criminal allegiance, sex, religion, faith, all that. They are out here to arrest criminals. And gang members tend to fall into the criminal realm. They're criminals. They shoot, kill, pack illegal weapons. They're criminals. So as a consequence of that, they have to have a gang division of the police department. No, but the pigs ain't out just to arrest a certain person. They are anti-criminal. I ain't mad at them. That's their job. 5-0, no, I ain't got nothing against them. As far as they being soldiers, taking money out of the bank. If they swatting me on some activity, I gotta get down with them. That's the rule. But I ain't gonna fuck with them for no reason, and they ain't gonna fuck with me. Cause I drive by the rule. I ain't got nothing against 5-0. They push up on me, I'm getting ill. And the motherfuckers know.
Now, reaching out to you from the beautiful Pacific Northwest, it's Ken and Lisa.
Topics that are important to you and only you. So today we have two special guests online. They're actually two clients and they broke records. Let's see if I can correctly. Hello, are you there? Hello, are you there? Wait a minute. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, Ken.
Good, good. I want to introduce you, everyone. This is John, and John lives in Alberta, Canada. And we also have Jessica, and Jessica lives in Delta, British Columbia. Hey, Jessica, are you there?
I'm here.
Good, good, good. Well, welcome to the Denied Entry to USA show, a show that is here for people like you and only you. But no one else. So let me introduce myself to everyone else who does not know me. And my name is Ken. I'm a legal process outsourcer. And in simple language, what that basically means is we work on cases that involve U.S. border cross issues. So what your issue is, we can sort it out. So let's speak to our first guest today. Jessica, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I am excellent. And our second guest is John. John, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Ken. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm honored to be on.
Oh, no worries. You're just coming in now. Oh, there you go. I see you. Here you come. There you go. There, everyone. So John just landed here. So how's everyone doing today?
Excellent.
Fantastic.
How are you, Jessica? How are you doing today? John is fantastic.
I'm excellent. Yeah, excellent. Excellent.
Good, good. Oh, before we start the show, we must give the proper respect to Her Majesty. Great country on this planet. Tribute I do at every show to the Queen. Oh, where's my co-host? Hey, co-host, how the hell are you? Oh, you're sick. Oh, you can't make it today. Come say hello to the two guests. It's John and Jessica. Yeah.
Hello.
There's the mic. Hello.
You're hello, John. Hello,
Jessica. Hi.
Hey, John here. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Jessica.
Yeah, she's my co-host, but she's under the weather today.
You'd be fine on your own.
You're just going to go home, then?
Yeah, I'll go home.
Okay, you'll be in tomorrow at 10.
Okay.
So I can sleep in. I'll be hungover.
Okay.
Okay. So you two had a very interesting experience with the border.
Totally.
Speak to Jessica. Jessica. So what happened with you? Kind of tell us a few brief things.
Where do I begin? I was crossing through the border in Seattle and was pulled over in secondary inspection and then was basically told that I was trying to be an intending illegal immigrant and then was basically deported and got given a 5-year ban.
Wow. So basically, they said for you to be blunt, because both of you know me well, and you know I'm extremely blunt, to say the least. They both basically told you to get the fuck out and don't come back for 5 years.
That's exactly what they did, in a pretty harsh way like that.
Yeah. So I don't want the door hit you on the way out.
Absolutely.
And I know what you were thinking in your mind.
Whatever.
That's what you thought.
I thought a lot of other things, too, that I won't say on the air.
I'm sure you are definitely, knowing you, I know you definitely were. But.
Well, I was.
Your process took what? Your process, you broke a record, by the way. You broke a record.
I you know, I don't even know if I feel good about that. When you tell me that now, today, it's fine. I laugh about it. But during the time period going through it, it was not fun.
Well, both of you broke a record because your case has been the longest of any, let me think here, of any female client. So you broke a record.
Yeah, it's not a record that I want to break, but I guess I did. And I'm envious of John's situation big time. But, yeah, I broke a record in the negative.
You also, you had a record up until a month ago of the person that did the longest statement to them. But now someone beat you out.
Yeah, so, and I was really happy about that somebody beat me. But I learned my lesson with regards to that as well.
And John also broke a record. Tell us about your case, John. Don't go in, you know, specific, but...
Well, the records, I don't know. I mean, I'm happy about the record I broke. I mean, if we're talking about time frame, from the time that you started on my case, which was in April of this year. I flew from Edmonton down to BC to see you, right?
Oh yeah.
And started the application process then. And April, then you applied for all my records and basically got that in April, May, June, I think July or something.
About July.
My records, just on the time frame that you had told me that you would get them on is basically when they came in, right? So once you got the records and you processed and had me do the checklist real quick, as quick as I possibly could, and did that all in let's see, August?
And that sounds about right.
Yeah, and actually the end of August, I drove down with the package complete, and of course you did the package real quick when I got it back to you and finished my checklist. You got and prepared the package and sent it back to me so we could do it all as quick as possible. So I drove that waiver package down to the Edmonton International Airport at the end of August and submitted it to the INS guys over there, and they told me that it would take approximately about 6 months. And you were telling me time frame about 9. But I ended up getting it in a month and a half, so I ended up getting my approval waiver about the middle of October.
I'm so envious, John. Yeah.
And to me, his stuff was worse than yours.
Wow. You know what? I am honestly very jealous when I hear that story because my situation was completely different. I submitted mine in May of 2012, and I got my waiver approval last week, which is 2.5 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, you broke the record.
Well, that's
and,
not
and
a kind of record you want to break.
No, not at all, but at least I got an approval. I guess that's the positive that came out of it.
And the funny thing is,
right?
Neither one of you have any kind of criminal record whatsoever. None of you had, that's not the issue at all. Nothing. In your case, they just thought you wanted to move there, essentially. And in John's case, he was just living there. And if I'm not mistaken, John, I think they told you, your lawyer told you, you will never ever set foot on U.S. soil again. So make a life in Canada. And they're at the door.
Well, I had two attorneys in the U.S. But I had one attorney out of Beverly Hills that told me that if I went and crossed the border, went back to Canada, that he felt he may never get me back or would never know how long it would ever take for him to be able to get me back. And that was an attorney that used to work for INS. Now, this attorney I had down in San Diego that worked on my case for 5 years, that I married an American, when I decided that I didn't feel that my wife was going to support me through the final sponsorship of the case, because I was having to actually stand in front of a judge to finish my case, my IMS case, and I just felt that my relationship with my marriage was just too on rocky ground to believe that she would support me all the way through that. So I decided to rescind my application and come back to Canada. And when I did that, and asked my attorney what he was going to be able to do for me as far as getting me back, he said, just stay in Canada. Don't try to cross the border because you might potentially you would have problems, is how he worded it.
Which essentially means you'd be in the federal detention center, also known as prison.
Well, and you know, I felt that I had, and if you guys, you know, if you really get on the internet and start searching around, when you overstay in America longer than a year, it's a 10-year ban. There's not a lot of places on the internet that are going to tell you that you can that Kim Scott's around, it's gonna take care of you and get you done, and you're not going to be sitting around for 10 years. I felt, after my attorney sent me that email, that I was done. He said, make a life in Canada. Don't even think about trying to come back. And
well,
you got to remember, I've been in the United States for 35 years, over half of my life. So it was easy for him to say that, but it wasn't easy for me to take.
And not to go into too much detail regarding your case, but in your case, you had a ban for life, for the rest of your life. You could not come ever go back the way they wrote you up. However, we found a way around.
I thought I was done. I thought I was finished. I thought I couldn't even fly to Phoenix to catch a jet to go to Mexico. That's the way I thought it was going to be.
And actually, the way your ban was written up, your ban actually couldn't have even been beaten by a waiver. You weren't even eligible for a waiver the way they wrote the ban up. So you were done for life. But lo and behold, in 6 weeks, you get your approval to enter.
I mean, I'm just totally amazed at what you have been able to do for me. And it's more than how much money it cost me or any of that. It's my freedom that you're giving me back or giving me a chance at. I mean, sure, I've got an approval for a year. But the good news is you don't drop me like a bad habit. You stay with me, and you want to see me through the long haul. So you're not a guy that just takes somebody's money and leave them kind of just in the middle of between here and there, because I still got quite a long ways to go before, you know, I can settle back into the U.S., but the procedure has started, and I've been approved for my waiver, and that's the beginning of all my good news. And I guess I would say that your bedside manner would be excellent. would be what I'd say, because I could get you on the phone just about any time and ask you any question. What you've done for me would have cost me thousands and thousands of dollars with these asshole attorneys in the U.S., it would have never given me the time of day past what they actually were paid to do for me.
Well, a lot of these lawyers don't know what the fuck they're doing anyway. I mean, we used to train them. So, yeah, they go to law school, which is fine. But a lot of them don't know what the fuck they're doing. They go by the book. But because I know the system, because I used to train a lot of these guys and these officers back in the day, I know the things these lawyers don't know. And that's why, in your case, I knew the backdoor route to get them to approve you. And they had to say yes. There was no way they could say no in your case. Even just that they couldn't really say no.
Well, if people could understand that sometimes the attorneys that they hire, they need to hire somebody to protect them from the attorneys, because the attorneys send them down the river, give them the wrong or bad advice, and get them in more trouble than they were in before they hired the attorney.
I agree with you there. I agree with John. John, you mentioned two key points. You mentioned freedom. When you're in this situation, especially, well, you had obviously a shorter time frame of receiving your waiver, but obviously a long time of other stresses prior to that. I felt like for 2.5 years that my life was stopped. And now that I have the waiver, it is freedom, but I couldn't have gotten there if it wasn't for the advice of Ken. I think what Ken did, which is what no other lawyer could have done, is just be there step by step along the way. And then also one of the things that's amazing that Ken had done through the process is he was emotionally always there, because I would pick up the phone and be very frustrated at moments in my life where I felt like I was stuck and I didn't have that freedom and I couldn't enter the country. And I had many moments, as Ken knows, of picking up the phone and saying, I'm frustrated, I'm scared, when am I going to enter, what's going to happen, what do I do? Ken, you know this, of all people, how many times have I picked up the phone and called you in extreme frustration, right?
And
this process is not easy.
And what did I essentially say? I said, you know what? I said, I like you. You're just going to suck it up and wait. That's what I essentially
said.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, and you said, I have to ride it through. And I did. It wasn't easy. And it certainly was not, but it does feel like a part of your life is taken away from you, especially when you have a life in the U.S.
I had to rein you in quite a few times of a few mistakes you were about to make. I said, nope, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Nope, you don't want to do that. And sure enough, because you didn't do those few small things, you got success. And,
yes,
you know.
I did. And you actually broke a record, too, if you're talking about record breaking, because I convinced you to let me apply for a waiver a month after being removed from the country, remember? And you told me not to do that. And what happened?
That's true. You're right. So we all broke records.
You broke a record. Because I got approved.
Boy, you sure wanted to get back in the country real quick, didn't you?
Well, I have many reasons why. A husband and now a baby, so, yeah.
Well, whatever reasons that we have, what I'm trying to say is there's many, 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 many stories and people out there that could use a Ken. And there's also many, many, many stories of people that have been taken advantage of and ripped off and bad attorney advice and, people, attorneys promising, you know, time frames that they can't deliver and things that just really put a black cloud on the whole thing. And, you know, I think more needs to be talked about it. And I mean, I'm going back to the early 80s and experiences I've had with different attorneys along the way that absolutely gave me terrible advice. And maybe that's why it's good for you, Ken, because you get more people like us.
In all honesty, your case and hers was actually two of the more tougher ones. It's actually more difficult clearing your case and hers than if you were, let's say, ex-drive-by shooter. That's easier to clear.
Well, help me, Lord. That doesn't make me sound positive. But since I have a waiver, it's okay now. I'm going to freak out.
I told you, I have a guy now. He has 45 charges. 45. And he actually is cleared permanently. And one charge is, I shouldn't say that one charge. But he's got 45 charges. And most are heinous. And he's cleared for life. Doesn't need a waiver.
Yeah, but should we ask...
You know what? I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Should we ask why that is? Is that the kind of people that they're letting in the country? Is that just the way the system's set up? Or what's going on? Or should we care?
It's kind of the way the system is set up. Because basically what happens is the people with the records, they tend not to say much when they're interviewed. So because you don't say much, the system goes by what's in the computer. So if nothing's in the computer or the stuff in the computer you can overcome it quickly. They don't have anything verbal from you. They have no choice but to approve you, you know, sometimes quicker. But the people who go there, the nice people who go there and do a lot of talking, those are the ones who just basically dig their hole and then toss the dirt on top of them.
But then, you know, to some degree, I feel like that's the system. And I don't know if it's me or John, or you can also chime in here, or Ken, I'd love to get your input on this, but when you're being an honest person, and let's face it, everybody makes mistakes in their lives, right? That's just human, that's the nature of humans. And so if you make a one-time mistake, I guess the result of it is you get a waiver and you're forgiven, but I feel like the interrogation that you go through during that time period is horrible, and it makes you feel like you're a criminal when you're not. And obviously honest people get nervous in those situations, and then you get put into these situations. So, Ken, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Is it a fair system?
Oh, fair at all. But the thing is, these guys are under a mandate. They have to refuse so many people, you know, because if they don't, they get in trouble. So it's kind of like going fishing. You know, and when you go fishing, you want to catch as many fish as possible. So in this particular case, the minute they catch a fish, they don't let it go. Now, they cannot catch the difficult fish. You know, sucks to be them, I guess. So when the easy fish come through, they just, in a sense, they lock on like a pit bull, and they will not let go. They will not let you go. because they can't catch the big ones. And it's just when it's up. So if you're...
Well, is it that what you sent me, some of the information you sent me today is, aren't they trained to try to get information out of you that will make you inadmissible so that even if you don't have a charge against you and you admitted that you did cocaine in the U.S. or you smoked marijuana in the U.S. and you don't have a charge against you, you've just admitted, though, that you've done something illegal. So now... aren't they trained to want to get that out of you so that they can say now that you're not admissible?
Exactly. They do whatever they can in the sense of to get you to admit something. Because the thing is, the computer system has a lot of holes in it. So they want you to fill in the holes. And then when you fill in the holes, that's what they can, you know, they use against you. And hence, it's okay, go home.
Well, then that means I think everyone who crosses the border on a daily basis should be listening to this show because that means anybody is a target.
I'm going to read you 212.6c under the Immigration Nationality Act. In general, any alien who, or willfully misrepresenting a material fact, seeks to procure or has sought to procure or has procured a visa, other documentation, or admission into the United States or other benefit provided under this act is inadmissible. And what that means in English is when you're entering, if they feel like you're misrepresenting a material fact and they can prove it, you're inadmissible, which this particular violation is actually a lifetime. But they do have waiver provisions. Like this one, false claim to U.S. citizenship. This one is a lifetime ban. And there's no waiver allowed for it. Of course, there's ways of getting around that. But
I know, but that's crazy. I mean, that's the situation that John was in, and it's absolutely. I'm in shock. I mean, it's not anything that you and I haven't had a discussion on, but when you read it, it's shocking to me.
Well, what's worse is you think because. I know, and in your mind, what happened to me was I kept thinking, what I did wrong was 20-some years ago. Can I be forgiven and have a chance at a new life like a lot of criminals do that do a lot worse things than what I did? And that's before I found Ken, which Ken always made me feel like a human being. That attorney that I had down in San Diego, I don't know if he was prejudiced against Canadians because he was a Mexican attorney and he dealt with Mexicans, but I don't know. But he just loved, or maybe he had that short syndrome because I think he was only about 5'4", and he had to crank up his chair on his desk so he could sit level eyeball with you, right? But maybe that was a short syndrome he had where he liked to talk down to you, you know, to me, when he could, you know, say, well, you know, if you would have never done that, then this would never happen. But it's just a different way that Ken seems to handle you. It makes you feel like a human being because, you know, even guys like O.J. Simpson made mistakes, right? I mean, but of course, unfortunately, he's not getting out of jail. So now talk about freedom. Huh? Oh, geez.
I think he'll be inadmissible in Canada.
I don't think everyone, he's going to be coming up here either, yeah.
My philosophy is either everyone's innocent, or two, whatever the person's accused of cannot be proven, so let them in, let them go. Everyone's innocent. No one did it.
But I
now,
think a good point.
That's very clear. That's very clear in how you deal with these waiver cases. I mean, you basically go the extra mile to make sure that the system realizes that it's not the person, that there's something wrong with the system, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, the person has been rehabilitated. Their life has changed. Now, mind you, like I said, not every offense actually requires a waiver. The one permanent waiver we have on the site, this particular guy, he likes to, he likes to beat up the police. He beats them up. He puts them in ICU. And they wrote back and said he did not need a waiver. Because that's not moral turpitude, beating up police. or trying
if
to run
If I didn't
off.
Receive my waiver in the mail, I would be really upset. But since I've received it, I'm just taking this news as shock.
Yeah, because trying to run them off the road or beating them up, assaulting them, that's not moral turpitude. Or if you're walking down the street.
That the officers are trying to keep the citizens of America safe, but they let those people into the U.S.? I don't quite understand that.
It's all about either moral turpitude.
I'm thinking the same thing.
Or what they call, it's also called an aggravated felony. So it just, if it's not in either one of those two categories regarding criminality, the person's not inadmissible. Like, for example, assault causing bodily harm under the Canadian Code. You're not inadmissible. So we had one guy came in. He had 4 convictions for assault causing bodily harm. He basically just beat the shit out of people just for fun. He didn't need it. And he wrote back and said he didn't need a waiver. He goes to the bar and gets drunk, beats the shit out of people, beats up the bouncers, beats up the police.
That's insane.
And he's the nicest guy. He's nice to me. He just likes to beat up people.
Well, everybody's going to be nice to you, Ken, because you get the job done. Jessica, were you carrying any guns with you when you were crossing or what?
Absolutely not. I was just nice, innocent human being that got screwed.
Well, you know, and I think what it is too is you got to remember most people just cross the border every day not thinking anything of it, like it's no big deal. But maybe there needs to be some sort of education or understanding of what these officers can do. And you know, I mean, it's a great thing that now that they have this show on, this border crossing show. I mean, I watch that from time to time, and I mean, they can take all of your electronics, they can look at all your email, all your texts, find anything they can on you, and start asking you a whole bunch of questions.
They can also search your laptop coming into America, whether you're a U.S. citizen or not, and you actually cannot know. Well, you can take that back. You say no all you want. They can actually see this from you and tell you, I'm going to search this anyway, whether you like it or not. And there's another thing you can do. You have to let them do it. And if on that laptop they find something that's not good, say the least, you are in trouble. And if you're a lawyer now going across that border with your laptop, you have client data, you know, pertinent data or sensitive data, they can actually look at it and copy it. Lawyer-client privilege won't apply. And I think that's screwed up.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's really screwed up. They do under the guise of security and looking for, if they say, child pornography. But there's no rule that says they cannot copy that data.
It feels like a violation of your privacy.
Oh, totally is. Totally is. So, you know.
But that's the only, I think that's one of the only places you're ever going to be involved in where you absolutely do not have any rights whatsoever on your privacy. And I think a lot of people don't understand that and how deep they can go on you, because everybody's just passing the border like, hey, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to Vegas for 3 days. Oh, okay, here you go, bye. But once they put you into secondary, all of a sudden everything changes, right, Jessica?
I have another guy. He has 25 charges, 3 convictions. Another one, he likes to, you know, beat up the police and run them over. He had to get a waiver. It's different. They wouldn't let him get the permanent one. But to this day, he still does that. He races down the street, you know, fucking 100K an hour, 120K an hour, running red lights, wrecking his truck. And they still let him in. And he has a breathalyzer on his truck where you have to blow in to start it. So when he leaves the bar when he's drunk, he will get someone nearby, say, hey, buddy, blow in here for me. I'll give you $20. Pay the guy $20. He jumps in his SUV and off. And I know for a fact that I actually saw him do it. I said, what the fuck? What are you doing? He said, well, I have to get home. I said, shouldn't you perhaps call a taxi? I mean, you know, I'll be okay. I said, okay. I said, you know, you want to get stopped by the police? He said, oh, I don't care. He said, I'll just kick their ass. I said, oh. And he goes back and forth all the time.
Well, he has a waiver? He's been cleared, right? He has a waiver, you
said? He's clear. He has a 5-year one now. But, yeah, he's clear.
But you know what, though? And I had this discussion with you probably very recently, is even though you get through this whole process and it's turmoil and it's emotionally draining, the biggest issue then becomes crossing the border again once you have the waiver. You fear. Like, that's how I feel. That I fear crossing the border now.
Oh,
well, you got Ken to help you there, and that's the main. You know what Ken's been able to do with me since I got my waiver is help me and get me to understand exactly what I'm in for. You know, when I do cross, right? So he doesn't. That's why I like the fact that he doesn't just once you get the waiver, all of a sudden you can't get a hold of him anymore.
Well, anyone knows me
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, I agree with you.
They can call me any time, any day. It could be 2 a.m. or 2 p.m. Mind you, 9 a.m., it's hard to reach me because I'm still sleeping. But pretty much any other time, it's easy to reach me, even, you know, nights, weekends, whatever. Because to me, the clientele are the most important thing. And their satisfaction is critical. You have to have happy clientele. It's just, there's no question about it. And a lot of these
you're amazing at that.
I'll tell you the way it was at the beginning, and I don't know how you felt. It's Jessica, right, Jessica?
Yeah, yes, John, it's Jessica.
Yeah, and so when I first handed over the money to get Ken to start, I really didn't know what I was doing. I was used to those attorneys that you thought you could trust, right, that were like, you know, I mean, they had a license. They had a license on their door, on their wall. You know, you thought those are the people you're going to pay, right? But once I started with Ken and got to know him and he got involved in my case, I started to build a huge trust with him. And I would not only a trust, but I built a friendship with him. And The way it goes and the way I feel, and Jessica, I don't know how you feel because you're just at that point where you got the letter and now you got to start crossing and getting that fear out and how long can I stay over in the U.S. and how do I end up getting, you know, whatever it may be that you may need to do. Like I eventually want to be able to stay most permanently in the U.S., but Ken's kind of guiding me in that direction. So I really appreciate that consulting that he's given me past that waiver that he's done for me so far.
And John, I agree. Ken's done the same thing for me. Ken, you have been very, very instrumental in helping me through to the next steps. And I think that's the difference between you and an attorney, because an attorney does the job and they want your money, but then they're done after you get the waiver. They don't care. And what people don't realize is that once you receive that waiver, you still have a process to go because you're still going to get pulled into secondary at times, right? You may not, but you have a pretty high chance. And so what do you do? How do you prepare? And Ken has been doing that for me. John, he has been sort of helping me out in terms of the steps to get home in the right channels before permanently moving there as a resident.
Yeah, so you don't make the mistakes again, because once you've made those mistakes, and I'm sure, Jessica, you found maybe this out through your experiences, nobody's telling you. You got to remember, I'm going back now 20-some years before the Internet was around. Now at least you can get online and research the Internet, because let's face it, the United States has the most complicated and most difficult immigration laws on the planet, as far as I know.
You actually are correct. I think England is the other one, but the U.S. is definitely number one for difficult immigration, you know, law.
So you make a mistake, and sometimes it's really, really hard. If you make a mistake, you're going to have to go find a Ken, and a Ken isn't that easy to find, trust me. I've looked for Ken for 20 years and never found him. So I can't even tell you. If you ask me right now how I found him, I'm not sure exactly, but I know I was looking I was looking frantically on the internet for somebody to try to tell me that I had some sort of hope in hell of ever being able to cross the U.S. border in my life again.
Well,
Ken, would you say you're easy to find?
Yes, and no. We're getting more into the social media and the SEO for the site. But initially, and I told John this, I believe, I initially focused the business for the immigrant community here in the, you know, in the Surrey area. But I've started to branch out more. And case in point, John asked for a contract, and I said, contract? I actually had to put one together because he's the only person in Alberta. He broke another record that has a contract. No one else ever wanted a contract. So I was like, sure, no worries. So I put one together. So he had a contract.
Yeah, that's because I'm used to dealing with the attorneys that are really the crooks anyway. So if I would have known better, I would have just handed you the damn money.
No, it's all good because the immigrant community, you know, like from India and Vietnam and Hong Kong, especially from India, they tend to like to do business on a handshake. And like case in point, if I tell one, if I say, I'm going to charge you $300 to talk to me, $200 to talk to me, and then we sign a contract, he will run the door so fast before I can finish the sentence. And no, thank you, he'll run. But then if I say, okay, I'll talk to you for free, this is what we need for free, everything, this is for free, but can you give me $2,000? He'll be happy to give me $2,000 cash in his hand. He'd rather give me $2,000 than $200. So I kind of tailored the business, you know, kind of tailored it like that. And so when you ask for a contract, I said, oh, contract? So let me see what I have here. Because like I said, you're only the third person since 2002 that wanted a contract.
You know, you got to understand, too, and I think this is where I think you could really help a lot of people is somehow, some way, because by the time they're going to find you, Ken, they've probably been burnt at least once or twice from somebody along the way. So by the time they get to you, they don't know who to trust anymore.
And true, fair enough. And there are two other pardon and waiver companies in BC. I can't mention their names, but they are known for taking the money and running. And I get a lot of their former clients. Now, mind you, they get a bit shocked, gobsmacked when I tell them the rates. Can I tell them straight up? I said my rates are higher than theirs, hands down. I said, but in this case, you're getting what you pay for. And sometimes they cry over the price, but in the end, they're happy.
Well, isn't that a good point you make, though? Remember that guy told you when I was sitting in the waiting room at the airport waiting to hand in my waiver application, and there was a guy sitting next to me that had only a DUI, and he had to keep going back every single year to reapply for a waiver and pay the $600 every single year. And then he started talking to me and he said, well, because he did it all himself. And he said, because I told him, I said, well, I had somebody that did it for me. And I told him what you charged me. And he said, wow, he was shocked. Well, that's a lot of money. But just think how much money he's paying. And I already told you this story, Ken. You told me.
Oh, yeah.
You probably could have got him. You could have got him a lifetime waiver, right?
And actually, believe it or not, your rate was one of the lower ones. Yours. We brought another record 2 months ago. A guy paid us $10,000 for a waiver.
There's no dollar.
Did you $10,000 for a waiver?
Yep, $10,000 for a waiver application.
Was he a criminal? Was he a criminal?
He had a criminal record. Yep, he had a criminal record. But I think, I know I can clear him for life. He has a drug offense. Certain drug offenses you can actually get for life.
Is he clear?
He's clear. He's cleared. He's good to go. He is so happy.
You know
he doesn't speak
much
English.
Thing is, those rates make sense because you're changing a person's lifestyle in that situation, right? So I understand they're paying for the price, which is you have a 100% rate of getting people cleared.
You can't put a price on that. You can't put a dollar amount on freedom. You changed my life. You gave me hope. You gave me a reason to be. I don't want to be where I'm at right now. I spent over half my life in the U.S. You knew that, Ken. You told me I was more American than I was Canadian. It's just
we're going to get you. We're going to get you back there anyway. Yeah. And I mean, it's just funny. Like I said, it's just you broke so many records here recently. It's just insane. It makes me very happy. But I'm the happiest when the people. Oh, I got someone else about to call. Okay, good. I'm the happiest when people come to me and they thank me because they've gotten cleared. I say, hey, that's what I'm here for. You pay me, you pay for a service. It's my job to ensure that you're happy. Your satisfaction is number one.
Yeah, but you can tell that you like helping people do this and you get off on it.
I do. I actually do. I get off on it. You're right. And I even, I will tell people straight up. I say, you know what? In my opinion, this case won't work. Hold on to your money. Come see me in 3 years. And they're shocked. They said, but this guy down the street said, well, I said, well, you go use him then. I'm telling you, hold on to your money because they're going to tell you no. And they just,
well,
they're just amazed that I let them walk out. They're so shocked that I let them walk out. I said, no, they're not going to prove you. You just got released a year ago. Come see me in maybe 4 years, then possibly. So I don't want to take your money knowing they're going to say no. People are just shocked that I let them leave. Like, well, why not? I mean, I don't like having unhappy people or clientele coming back saying, you told me. I said, no. If I tell you something, it's going to work. And,
well, remember you told me that I had to wait 2 years from the time I crossed the border. Remember that? I first called you?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Because you have to be bluntly honest with people, because if you tell people what they want to hear to collect money, you gain a reputation of being a crook. And, in my business, that's not a good reputation because you can end up, floating in a river.
Ken, there are people like that, though. And I almost got fucked into that, remember? So.
Oh, yeah.
It's good to have honest people in this, especially because this is your life that you're playing with when you're getting a waiver. People need to realize that if you get removed from the country, it's not as simple as I'm removed, I can get a waiver, I can apply, and it should be over with. That's not the situation. It's an emotional game while you're waiting. It's dreadful because, A, you can't contact them by phone. Let's face it, you can't contact Admissibility Review Office by phone to find out where the status is. They, and you've had this discussion with me many times, that if you try to inquire by email, they will send you something generic back, right? Which we've all received. Anybody who's listening out there and is waiting for a waiver, right? It's that generic message, and that's frustrating because you know what that says? That says to me, it says, we don't really care. You're just another number, and we'll deal with you when we deal with you. And my example is a really good example of that, that 2.5 years later, it's like, okay, now we have time to deal with your case, and we decided 2.5 years later we're going to give you a waiver, but yet we'll give some of these criminals who don't obviously have a longer transcript to get cleared in 6 months. Right? So there's no rhyme or reason behind it, and that's the emotional roller coaster game that they play, and that's tough.
By the way, the guy I told you about who has a 5-year waiver, who drinks and then he jumps in, etc. Did he have time? His 5-year waiver took 3 months. 3 months. I couldn't believe
it.
He initially held the record for the fastest. But now John's beating him out. And the minute I tell him that, he's going to be pissed. Because he wanted to keep the record.
Hey, Jessica, could you tell us just a little bit about your story, about why it's so important for you to go back to the U.S.?
Sure. Basically, at the time, I think I should backtrack a little bit. At the time that I was crossing over when I was denied entry, I was actually going to visit the person that I was seeing at the time. So, but I had no intention of staying in the country and not coming back. So now I'm married to that person, and we have a baby. And so being married to a U.S. citizen and him being in the position that he is there, it makes sense for me to make the move there with our child. So it's absolutely important for me to be able to enter the country again.
So you not only need to enter the country again, you need to stay there.
Yeah, I need to stay there, and it's great to immigrate, but if I can't enter the country, what's the point of getting a green, like a green, you can't, I mean, you can get a visa, but if you can't enter, then it's really tough to get into the country. Like, I mean, the process is that you can apply to immigrate, but, and you may get a green card, but that doesn't mean you can get into the country, and that's why being inadmissible is a tough thing. You have to still get a waiver. And if I didn't receive this waiver, then I would have had to apply for another waiver, which Ken knows about as well, which is a hardship waiver. And again, proving that would have been a lot of work, a lot more work than applying for a 212.
Well, with these cases, we always have a backup ready. So in case they say this, it's okay. They said that, then we'll do this. They said that, then we'll do this. They said that, then we'll do this. So with these type of cases, you really always got to have like a contingency plan like in place. It's kind of like playing chess. They move this piece, so you move this piece. They move that piece, you move this piece. And some of these companies and these lawyers, they don't understand that. They just fill a form and said, you guys are just digging holes for these people. And a lot of them hate my guts. They hate me. But it sucks to be them. They're probably listening right
now.
Well,
I didn't understand what Ken meant about the attorneys don't like him. When I first met him, he kept telling me that the attorneys don't like me, and he kept telling me that. And I didn't understand it. Now I understand it more, because after he got my waiver, what do you think it would be like if I took the letter and was able to cross the border legally, and I went back to that attorney down in San Diego with that letter in my hand? The attorney that thinks that I should, that he got rid of me for the rest of my, he probably thinks he'll never see my face again. And what would happen if I went there and I sat in his lobby there with the letter in his hand, and he came in there and see me sitting there? I mean, of course, he doesn't know who Ken is. He doesn't know who helped me in, but I don't know if he'd be all that happy to want to know this guy too much, you know? I mean... I mean, especially if I told him that, you know, geez, it's funny because these people that helped me in, they heard about my story, and they want to include me in a chapter in the book that they want to write. And geez, I don't know what my attorney would think about that. Of course, we wouldn't use his real name, would we, Ken? I don't know.
And that's funny you say that, John, because some lawyers actually, Ken had come up with this brilliant idea, looking at my transcript, that there's a possibility that my situation, with what had happened, that it could be egregious, right? We had discussed this, Ken, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Ken had advised me to talk to a few lawyers, right, to see if they would just come with me to the border where I was removed, and see if, you know, they would look at the transcript. And it was clearly egregious, but there was not a single lawyer that wanted to do that, not one. And it was a very simple thing to do. I don't think it was difficult to do. But I don't think my case was enough for them to want to act on it. And so I was really disappointed in lawyers at that point, because I thought to myself, if you were in the same position that I was in, then you could understand how the situation is very emotionally taxing on me. But Ken spotted it. I saw it. I could see clearly that I could have been, this whole thing could have been erased a long time ago, but there's not a single lawyer that would touch that. And that in itself was disappointing.
You remember the conference call we had? You actually have a lawyer. Remember, we did a 3-way call on the phone. And remember, it was a lawyer Seattle area. And what did he say to me? You remember what he said. What did he tell John?
Yeah,
he first asked
if you were a lawyer. He asked if you were a lawyer.
And I told him no.
And then he was surprised that Ken knew the law as well as Ken did.
And he said, just go out and just start taking, get your, I think he said, get your bar or whatever now. And I said, oh, okay, well.
He said Ken needs to get his law degree right away. Yeah, he did. Yeah. He said Ken needs to get his law degree right away.
It's just, this stuff is, to me, this stuff is like so easy. I mean, I've been doing this stuff for years, and a lot of these lawyers are trained because a lot of them don't know what they're doing. And
well, maybe you should explain that, because that's really important where you come from too, because you and I, you know, I wanted to get to know you more, and as we went along with my case, I started to dig in a little more, and you started to tell me where your background was, and I mean, that's so important to know, because no wonder you're like in the brain of these officers that are trying to keep us out of the country. You know how they think, and why do you know that, Ken?
Well, I've been doing this 02, and like I said, I used to train some of these guys in the past. So not the ones they have now, the former ones. The ones they have now, these guys have a clue what they're doing. They don't have a single clue. Because I look at how the sworn statements are written, and I look at how they conduct their interviews, and I'm thinking, where the fuck did these guys learn this stuff? It's so astounding to me. They just really don't know. And
yeah, but
I was down there once at the port of entry, and I was just, you know, I just went there with a client. He's getting a work visa, which is nothing. One of the guys called me up in front of the client, and he says, "Hey, there's a guy here. Are these assault charges? Will they make him inadmissible?" I said, "Well, wait a minute. This is not a CIMT, so you can't really get him for this. You can't really get for this." He said, okay. Just ask you for advice or help. I said, well, he's just unsure about something. And the client, his jaw hit the floor. He couldn't believe it. Because the guy didn't know. These guys don't know. It's astounding. And this was in 06 this happened. So now the ones they've hired since then know even less.
So basically, the way that I see it, and John, I don't know if you see it the same way that I do, it's like these guys have a grade 4 level of education in the sense of how they know so little about what you're doing and how you're entering into the country, and they're just trying to get you. That's all it is. So you're treating them like they're in high school. Like, that's how I feel. And I've had situations like that with border officers. And I think I told you, Ken, that when I was going across the border several years ago, the CBP officer asked me, what is my level of education? And I said, I have a doctorate. And he said, what does that mean? I said, that's a PhD. And he said, what's a PhD? I said, that's a doctorate. Then he asked me again, what's a doctorate? I said, that's a PhD. And he goes, what's a PhD? I go, that's a doctorate. That was exactly what I said. And that was, we repeated that back and forth 3 times, and he still had no idea. But he let me through.
Well, I didn't tell you the story about the time there was a female minister here, and she wanted to cross over. If I was not there to see this, I would have never believed it. He says, what do you do for work? She says, I'm a minister. He said, minister? He says, you're a woman. And she says, well, yes. Well, what are you coming in for? She said, I'm going on a religious retreat. The guy said to her, what are you running from? She said, what do you mean? He said, what are you retreating from? She said, I'm going on a religious retreat. He said, man, are you being persecuted because of your religion? And she looked at me. I just bowed my head. I just couldn't take it. I said, oh, boy. And she, I mean, it was fine. He let her in. And the other time, there was a female doctor. She was like 5'1". She was from India. And the guy there, he said to her, he says, you don't look like a doctor. And she said, what do you mean? He says, you can't be a doctor. You don't look like one. And he gave her a hard time. He didn't believe it because she didn't look like a doctor. And
you know what, Ken? They said that to me when I was removed. They said the same thing to me. The same thing was said to me by a male CBP officer. He said, you're not a doctor. I said, yes, I am. And he said, there's no way. Something along the lines of that. Like, it was pretty rude. But he basically didn't believe me that I had my doctor degree.
Yeah, and what happened to me once, this is no lie, and I can't say his name. I know exactly who he is. He looked at me, and he kept me there for 5 minutes, or maybe it was 10. And because of the shoes I was wearing, he told me what tribe in Africa I was from. and with the tribe's food and traditions. I says, oh, cool. Okay. Oh, nice. Oh, wow. I'd never knew that. Oh, mind you, I've never been to Africa and I don't have relatives from Africa. But he told me because of the shoes I was wearing, what the name of the tribe and the culture. I said, oh, okay. Oh, okay. Cool. But I had enough sense to know. So, okay, you know, he can have his 5 minutes of, you know, knowledge, which is fine. It's okay, okay, oh, wow, oh, wow. Then he was smiling broadly and said, have a nice day. Now, can you, now...
Wow.
Yeah. I said, oh, I didn't know I was from that tribe. Oh, oh cool. I said, oh, boy.
That's very sad.
So, you know, when I hear these stories, I'm not, and I went down there another time, this was 07, two other guys, and I said, look, let me tell you guys one thing. When we go down here, these guys, I'm going to interact with these guys differently. I'm letting you guys know now. I'm going to interact with them differently. They said, okay. So I'm letting you guys know. I told them three times. They said, okay. So we get there, and the guy in the booth says, let me get the accent down. He says, where are you boys going? And I can't quite get it. He said, where are you boys going? And I said, I tried to imitate the accent. I said, hey, Sarge, we got to get some business taken care of here. He said, oh, you boys get inside now. Get. So we went inside, and it was a small business, nothing major. So we came outside. I said, hey, Sarge, we're all squared away now. He said, good. He said, outstanding. You boys get going now. And their jaws hit the floor. You still there?
I don't even know what to say, Ken. It just makes me think that it makes it scarier and scarier to cross the border.
Yeah.
Well, they get a lot of these guys from the southern states who grew up, you know, on the pig farms and the coal mines, and they grew up eating baked beans and biscuits, gravy. So they join the army or navy, and they go, you know, to war. They learn how to shoot, which is fine. So then these guys get released from the service. They get hired at the port of entry there, and these guys are combat trained, educated in the small southern town of Tennessee, Georgia, Mississippi, and they're dealing with people here with doctorate degrees, PhDs, or even say master's degrees. And these guys, they don't understand, even though it's the same language, they don't understand the mannerism and presentation. So when people go down who are very well educated, these guys think they're being condescending, you know, so they say, I'll show this person who has the biggest pair here. And it's not even that. And then that military side kicks in, and it's just a recipe for disaster. And then if a person just says, well, why are you doing this to me? Just raises their voice a bit. When that combat side kicks in then, you know, the fighting side, and you won't win. You won't win against them in that way.
Well, Jessica, what did you learn from your experience of crossing the border that last time when they actually excluded you?
It was, to be honest with you, the lesson I think I learned was pretty tough. I mean, because of the emotional roller coaster that I went through along the way. But what I learned from it is that if you're an honest individual, I think this is just people who cross the border on a daily basis, you need to say less. You need to keep your answers short, succinct, right, precise, and you need to think about the questions that they're asking you because they're worded in a way that are trying to sort of get you so that they have a reason to say, aha, now we're going to take you into secondary inspection and let's see what's going on here. So that was my biggest learning lesson is when you're crossing the border, say as little as you can.
I think that's, mm-hmm.
I
think, yeah.
And what's that?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that was one of the learning lessons that I learned. And I think the second one that I learned is that once you do get removed from the country, the process is very emotionally draining and you have to be prepared for it. And the only thing I can think of that it's equivalent to it's equivalent to, say, like a long-distance relationship, the emotional, like how taxing that can be, or like even the process of immigration for anybody immigrating anywhere in the world, like that waiting period. So anytime you're waiting for something for a long period of time where there's an unknown, you have to be prepared for that when you're going through the waiver process, unless, of course, you're, you know, working with Ken, who Ken seems to be breaking records, so it's not so bad. It doesn't feel like you're bleeding.
Well, Jessica, you made a good point there, and I can understand your pain there when you said the unknown and the waiting time, because I think that's what made me leave the country, because when I knew I was in the country so long that if I crossed the border, I knew that I was going to potentially have hell to pay to ever try to come back. But I got so wore out on that waiting game, because it went on for 5 years where I didn't know for sure what was going to end up happening, because the relationship in my marriage was rocky, so I didn't really know the outcome of my green card. So that was actually worse than, you know, like just that waiting time in between, not knowing what was going to happen. So it wears you. It wears you out.
It does. And to add to that, sorry, Ken, before you say something, is I think also, and Ken, you told me this, they don't care. And I think that is the part that's the hardest part, because you hope to God that when they're reading your application, that they think you're a parent, you know, whose child is away from their, you know, their father or mother or whatever, right, as they're reading this transcript. But as you said, they don't care. So I think that's the emotional part as well. But anyways, Ken, go ahead.
Oh, speaking of that, yeah, you reminded me of the client who he had a work visa there. He married a girl who was a CUNT. And because he would not give her $20,000 a month in child support, she said, "You will not see your son." The $10,000 a month he was paying her was not enough, because she wanted, you know, a new, Lamborghini, Bentley, whatever it was, some kind of high-end car. She wanted a new car. She had to buy a new home, because the home she was in, she said she got bored with it. And she said she cannot afford to go, you know, out shopping in her life with the money he's paying. Mind you, that money was a kid. So he said, "I'm giving you $20,000. He said, $10,000 a month is more than enough for my son." So she says, "Well, okay, in that case, you won't see him." So he overstayed to be with his boy there. This guy had never been arrested, never been charged. He came back here, tried to re-enter. And because he was so honest, they removed him. And he said, "Well, you know, hey, I just wanted to be with him. Only reason why I did it, I just wanted to be honest with you." And he said, "That's fine." And he said, "Well, when can I see him?" I said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Well, what do you mean you don't know? I want to see my son." I said, "Sir, that's your problem." That's what they said. And he said, "Well, yeah, but I won't be able to see my son while this process is taking." "Well, tell him to come here." "Well, his mom won't bring him here." "Well, sir, that's your issue to sort out, not ours. Have a nice day." He says all he could do to not punch the guy in the mouth. But he loves his son. And I wasn't surprised when I heard that. And speaking of that, a year and a half, Jessica, you still broke the record for that, but his took a year and a half, and they only gave him 6 months. Now, you tell me, how is it
I guess I'm lucky.
Yeah, how is it a guy who beats up the police, puts him in ICU, gets cleared permanently, another one who beats him up, drives drunk, along with his other 25, 26 officers, gets 5 years. This guy who had educated with an engineer, never any criminality, never even smoked a joint, he gets 6 months. 6 months.
That's the shocking part. There's no rhyme or reason. He got 6 months of a waiver. I got permanently cleared, right? Like, I mean, I have a waiver that's permanent. I don't have any restrictions. John has a waiver. Yeah, John's permanent. And this guy gets 6 months, and a drive-by shooter, some of them don't even need a waiver to enter. Like, seriously, where's the rhyme or reason behind this? That's what pisses me off.
Alleged. But
oh, God.
It's just the system. It's Because I actually had forgotten about him until you what you said reminded me. Just how the system is set up here. The stuff I see daily.
Yeah, it's very, very. I think that helps. That doesn't help with the emotional roller coaster you're going through. Is hearing other people's stories. It's heartbreaking. And not obviously not the criminals because they managed to get waivers pretty quickly. I envy them. I'm jealous of them sometimes, but I'm really happy that they're able to get cleared.
And we got another guy. He had 35 convictions for robbery. 35. And mind you, his waiver took, I think, maybe 4 months. But he got cleared.
See, no rhyme, no reason. I'm innocent. I was honest, and I'm an honest individual, and I didn't do anything wrong, and I've never had a criminal record, and look at how long it took me, 2.5 years.
The big difference is none of these guys would talk. They said, sir, I have nothing to say. Sir, I have nothing to say. So their cases were actually easier because they didn't say anything. They keep their mouth shut. They don't say a word. But one thing I want to emphasize to people is that they need to get the word lie out of their mind. No one tells a lie. You only give your version or your opinion of the subject matter. That word lie needs to disappear. Because what you believe in your mind, who are they to tell you what you believe in your mind? If you feel and believe you can fly, if you clap your hands and fly, who are they to say you cannot? Or anyone say you cannot fly? Now, if you decided to take a toke the night before, which is, you know, your prerogative, and no one knows what you've done in the sense of smoking or whatever, you cross over and they say, hey, have you smoked? If you decide to elaborate on what you did last night, you will be inadmissible. Now, if he's asking you, did you smoke last night? And if you decide, I'm not telling you to do it, if you decide to give an answer that indicates you did not, there's nothing to go on. There's nothing in the system, so nothing can be used. So I tell people, it's up to you what you decide to tell these people. I don't tell them what to say. You decide what you want to tell these people. But if it's not in the system and you admit to it, it's used against you. If it's in the system, you admit to it, that's fine because it's already in the system. Like we had a guy, he had been charged in Indiana with possession of 187 pounds of Mary Jane. He fought it in court there, and he got dismissed. He beat it. He was good to go. He comes back here, crosses over, and they say, hey, what happened in Indiana? Instead of him saying, sir, I prefer not to talk about that, or something, along those lines, he starts going into detail, singing like a canary. And now this guy, he's 26, he needs a waiver for the rest of his life. He hadn't even been convicted, but because he's kept singing. And a lot of people don't understand that they go by what's in the system and whatever you admit to. If you admit to the elements, it's used against you. And there's another guy I know right now, he smokes 3 times a day, Mary Jane 3 times a day. And he's a permanent waiver. And he goes all the time, and they ask him, do you smoke? And he, for some reason, he tells them no. I don't know why he tells them no. He says no. He tells them no. And it's okay. Have a nice day. He's actually in Vegas right now. 3 times a day.
I have a question then, Ken. Yeah. So then I have a question. When you, and this is for everybody who's listening who have waivers and are going, are crossing the border on a regular basis or whatnot, or are going to be crossing, when you pull over to the border, and because you're saying it's what they don't know that's in the system, they don't know, right? That's what you're saying, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. They don't know.
So let's say they say to John, I'm going to use John as an example because I can't think of any other example right now. Sorry, John. But now they say to John, hey, we just noticed that you have a waiver. So what happened? What should John be saying? Because now that's in the system, right? So what would John's response be then, Ken? What should he say? So now they're going to go into the system and look the situation up. What should he do?
In my opinion only, not advice, not legal advice, in my opinion only, on their screen, they know what it says. John knows what happened. So because, he overstayed, 30 plus years, which, whatever, and because John, made the claim, the false claim, which they know about, So by John, you know, saying, well, you know, I overstayed and I made the false claim and, you know, I got overture, it matches or mirrors the system, so it's not used against them. It makes sense.
Right. So John shouldn't say
that. So what was your answer?
Should just say
I didn't hear that. You were breaking up. What was your answer to that, Ken?
No, what I said was, first I said it's not advice, it's just my personal opinion. John knows, you know, he overstayed 30 plus years, which is whatever. John knows he made the false claim to being a citizen there, which they know. So if they say, what do you get this waiver for? And if John says, well, I overstayed 30 years and I made a false claim to being a citizen here. So I was ordered removed and they cleared me. I'm cleared. It's short. It's like on a talk show. It's stupid. It's swamp stupid. And it's fine.
But shouldn't John just say it's in the system? So doesn't it make sense for them to just, wouldn't a better answer? I don't know. I'm just asking you. I'm playing devil's advocate here since we're on the show. Would it make sense for John to actually say that? Or should John just say, sir, I'm sure it's in the system. I can't quite recall exactly what happened.
Well, again, in my opinion, if he says it the way you said it, it may antagonize them and cause them to want to turn the burner up more, if you know what I mean. But because everybody knows, they know he overstayed. He knows. So yes, you know, yeah, I overstayed, which is fine. Because it's in the system already. And yeah, I made the false claim, which is fine. It's in the system. And yeah, I was removed. It's in the system. And I'm cleared. It's so sweet. It's short, sweet, and simple. And that way they can't say, you know, you saw that, you there, John?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh. And that way they can't say. Okay, that way they can't say that he didn't tell the truth. He told the truth. And...
Okay.
Because in the system,
so what about in my example? What would be a really good response, let's just say? Because I'm sure lots of people have gone through my example.
Well, it's the same thing. It's like, well, yes, sir, you know, I got this. I was, you know, crossing over. I did a sworn statement. People believed that I was moving here, and I received a 5-year ban, and that's it. Short and simple.
But I received a waiver. Okay.
Jessica, were you crossing in a car or were you crossing, taking a plane?
I was taking a plane.
I was wondering
Seattle when I was attending.
I was just kind of wondering because it didn't sound like you had a lot of stuff that you were taking across the border, but I guess that wasn't the issue, huh?
They perceived from the stuff that I had that I was, and I kept explaining to them I wasn't.
And the way you just said that was perfect, by the way, when you said they proceed. So, again, it's not advice. It's up to you. You decide what you say. But in my opinion only, because if you elaborate, because of the fact that they perceived I was moving here, and sir, and I did a sworn statement, and this is why I was ordered removed, you know, banned for 5 years. And so it's still the truth, but it's not enough to really hang you with.
That makes complete sense. I think that's wonderful to have this example for people to hear.
Yeah, and they can't say, well, you did misrepresentation, because you didn't. You told the truth. And they can't say, well, you're lying. Well, sir, this is basically what happened. If it's basically summarized up and you know it's in the system, they can't say a thing. They get people because of the fact that things aren't in the system, and then people start elaborating. They start getting diarrhea of the mouth. Then you're done. You're just done. Then the person will come to me, and I will tell them $5,000, and they'll start crying. I say, well, look, you said this, you said all this. Like the one person, her statement was 13 pages. 13 pages. So she has now broke the record.
But of course you're going to clear, right?
Sorry?
Did Jessica have 13 pages or somebody else?
This is someone else.
Hell,
someone
it was not me.
No, this is someone else.
How many pages did you have, Jessica?
Oh, God. I was the second best, apparently, record, according to Ken. 7 pages?
Yep, you were. That's a record. But this girl,
you're awesome,
pages.
Jessica. You're awesome. I love it.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John. I don't know if these records are good or not, but I don't want to beat these records again.
Oh, God.
I even told the girl, I said, you know what? I said, this statement here is everything that a person is not supposed to do. And she says, oh, great. I said, this is textbook. So this is just fucking textbook. I told her, I was blunt, this is fucking textbook. And she said, don't get too excited. I said, oh, no, but this is just textbook, everything not to do. I said, I've never seen anyone do this. I could just see her eyes just dropping lower and lower. I said, but no, we can get this cleared, mind you. I told her the price. She almost had heart failure, but I said, that's fine. She just pays monthly. I'm happy with that.
She pays monthly. I love that. Well, I was telling Ken that I was going to, when I met Ken, I told him I was going to write a book, some of my immigration experiences that I'm sure could easily go on a documentary or a movie, absolutely. But then once I got to know Ken a little bit more, I told Ken, I said, geez, the book's not going to be about me. It's going to be about you, and there's going to be one chapter in it about me, and I think there's going to be another chapter in there about Jessica.
That's hilarious.
But I told Ken, I said, Ken, the other night, you got to start thinking about who's going to play you, what movie star is going to play you in the movie.
That's a good point.
I agree with you, Ken. Start thinking.
But honestly, what I have to say about that is this. I think there's so much interest in immigration. There's so many stories on the internet. There's so much stuff going on, good, bad, and ugly. I think the story needs to be told. I really do. You know? I think there's enough interest in it. In America there is, for sure. You know, and especially with what's going on, you know, right now. So
I on the website we put on there is that we're bluntly honest with everyone about everything. And I said, if your provider starts giving you guarantees of success, run, because it's a cash grab. I tell everyone, I guarantee nothing. I said, I will do my best, but I cannot guarantee they're going to say yes. And when you're bluntly honest like that with people, they appreciate it. I've had to tell a few people, I said, if you don't get cleared, I will get all your money back. I've told three people that. That was the closest I got into a guarantee. I told this woman a month ago, I said, if they write back and they do not give you a permanent one, you just get a regular one, you're free, and I will pay the government fee. And I'm a man of my word. So she says, oh, okay. So I'm going to see how that goes. She had one simple fraud offense, one. And I said, and I told her, I said, I think you qualify under what's called a petty offense exemption. And, you know, I had a legal opinion written up by one of my lawyer colleagues who wrote up an advisory opinion. So we just basically included that with the packet. And we're going to see what they say. They should say yes. And if they say no and she just gets a normal one-year waiver, oh, well, I'm out of $585 for her government filing fee because I always keep my word. And I'm always bluntly honest with everyone. I'm blunt with everyone.
Well, there's a lot of waiver companies out there on the internet that you can go to. They probably charge a lot less than you do, but the difference is you get what you pay for.
Oh, yeah, they are cheaper. I'm the first one to admit they're cheaper, and they all hate my guts. They are cheaper. But one of the things also that I like this work or like me, because I'm also a narcissist. So I get off knowing that I won another case against the system. Like, yes, yes. I pull so many rabbits out of hats, it's just unreal.
Yeah, but you do a lot more than just the waiver. That's what you got to understand. People on this radio show has got to understand how much more you do. When you call your attorney, he's pressing a button. He's recording every minute of talk that you're doing. He's charging you for that, you know? You got to understand it. There's a lot of times you just give free advice. You just, you know, it's like you care. So people got to understand why you get a lot more for you, you know, with your service than you might with somebody else.
And I appreciate that vote of confidence, by the way. But I like to say I give free information as opposed to advice. I give only free information. And free information and my personal opinion combined. Because in the end, it's up to the person to decide which route they want to go. I tell them my opinion and what actually the book says. And I say, you decide what you want to do. And, you know, they, 9 times out of 100, they pretty much all go the same route. Pretty much. So.
Well, I just know I'm going to stick with your advice all the way through this thing. What about you, Jessica?
Jessica, are you there? Hello?
Jessica is here, sorry. Just give me one second. Sorry, I have a baby here that's also demanding my attention, so I'm trying to multitask. I didn't hear the question, Ken. What was your question? Sorry, John, what was your question?
Oh, what was it I just said? I was thinking, what was I saying, Ken? I just think that Jessica and I probably feel the same way about the fact that, you know, you're helping us through not just the waiver, but, you know, what we need to understand and do after we get the waiver.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Ken is very good at giving not only just advice, but just helping along the process, like the process along the way. And I didn't feel like the attorneys that I spoke to were going to give me that level of business. So that I'm really happy with what Ken has done for me. Absolutely.
I appreciate the confidence. But like I always say, I give only free information and my opinion. Just, you know, so I can clarify and cover. Because I don't actually legal advice per se. I just give my opinion or free information that's out there on the system and what's in the books. The books on the system. So, you know, combine it together.
Well, I'd rather hire you, Ken, than any attorney that's got, you know, whatever they got, whatever, you know, college they or university they went to and how many years they've practiced or whatever they've done. I'd rather go to you any day than one of those guys. I've already experienced those other attorneys out there.
Well, it's funny because quite often they actually call me up anyway and ask me, say, what do you think on this case? How can we argue this? I say, well, what you can do, I said, petty offense may not apply. I said, but the Dillingham versus Ashcroft, we can use that and get the guy out of a waiver for now, because he's mostly here in the western part of North America, so he's good to go. And he said, okay, send it to me, and I'll show you how to document it. I'll show you how to write it up. And it happens all the time. All the time.
Well, I don't know if you're given... If you're given free advice, but you've definitely got a true value to all that you're doing.
Well, again, I appreciate the vote of confidence. We actually were going to have a third caller. Just ignore all that. He was going to call in. He didn't call yet. He had to take care of his son. So, but that's all. But bottom line, you two are happy with what happened, and now your life is new and improved.
Yeah, absolutely. And you became my new best friend.
Oh, I feel the same way for both of you. Oh, actually.
Have you been stopped at the U.S. border? If so, we can help. Been denied entry to the USA? If so, we can help. Criminal record?
Is it over?
We can help you get a pardon. Call 1-888-908-3841 and ask
Ken?
Us to solve your USA entry problem.
Ken, is the show over?
I just played the commercial.
Oh, okay. When is the show over? Just out of curiosity.
Actually, in about 3 minutes.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, it was about 3 minutes. But I can let you guys go now. I can pretty much stop at any time because I know for John it's about 9:30 there.
Well, it's Aria's getting restless, so I'm like, she keeps making sounds in the back, so I figure, you know, whenever you're going to go, it might be best for me to get going before she starts wailing.
Oh,
Jessica, it was a pleasure. Jessica, it was a pleasure to meet you, and I wish you all the luck in the world, and maybe someday we can meet down in the U.S.
Absolutely, John. Looking forward to crossing over and seeing you hopefully in the U.S. Come visit the family anytime so we can celebrate that we finally made it back to the U.S.
Maybe Ken will let us, meet each other someday soon. So I look forward to that. And Ken, thanks again for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it. And anything you need from me in the future, you know, you got me, pal.
I really, really appreciate it. And now the show has been heard around the world. So now you two are now celebrities.
Yeah, awesome.
Thanks. And again, for the world to know, Ken, you can stay at my house in the U.S. anytime. You've been absolutely incredible through the process, and everyone should go to you when it comes to dealing with the situation at the border and getting a waiver.
Oh, thank you so, so much. By the way, this is going to be a podcast, so you can listen to it anytime. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I was going to say, this is a podcast, so you can listen to it anytime that you want. But I will send you the link.
Are we still on the air?
Yeah.
Are we still on the air?
Yeah. That's okay. We'll just chat tomorrow. So, hey, Jessica, you have a great night, and we'll chat with you later.
Thank you.
And John, you have a great night. We'll chat with you later.
You bet, John. And like I say, everybody out there, if you need the best, go to Ken. Have a good night. Bye now.
You too.
Here I stand, done bent. Gotta represent. Stop sent. Throat L.A. every day, nigga. Monthly, yearly. 34 to be exact, nigga. Fear me. Atomic dog, I'm in your zone, your area. Bull Massive, Pit Bull Terrier. I'm coming through like the Wu dumping chambers. Thug life, get it right, nigga, danger. 7 shots to my body, ain't no killing me. Lock and load, double back, I had you feeling me. 40 Glock up on your block, headshot. Chest plate getting blown when the 9 knocks. And in the distance, ain't no resistance. Say your homeboy swear they gonna murder me. Said they heard of me, they think I'm on a murder spree. But when they roll up and chase try to find me, that's when I'm dumping with the fat Mac 90. From the cradle to the grave, I've been kicking static. I've been around from revolvers to automatic. See, I'm a stand-up, stomp-down soldier. Much older now from back then, when I was thugging in my songs on my black swim. See, I'm a G, nigga, married to the thug shit. Here the COE, Sherm stick. That's how we do it, kicking back.
What up? Join us next time for another episode of the Denied Entry to USA Show. A show to not only educate you about U.S. entry waivers, but we're also here to help you stay out of trouble. Make your choices in life wisely. Handle your business, or your business will handle you.
We're gonna give y'all a little something about what happens on an everyday life over here, man.
Each and every day, it's the same niggas, the same people, the same community, whatever. We don't change.
As I ride, smoking that pot, until stay lit.